Jivan Chalo Bhagavatam Vivenyum Nachatumakyo Vilabhetayastu Shri Vishnu Parvya Manjastulasya Shvasan Chalo Yastu Navedagandam Jivan Chalo Bhagavatam Virenum Najatu Martyo Vinabheta Yastu Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastu Lasya Shvasan Chalo Yastu Navedagandam Jivan. While living. Shava. A dead body. Bhagavat Angri Renum. The dust of the feet of a pure devotee. Never. Jatu. At any time. Martya. Mortal. Abhilambheta. Particularly received. Ya. A person. To. But. Shri. With opulence. Vishnupadya. Of the lotus feet of Vishnu. Manuja. A descendant of Manu. A man. Tulasya. Leaves of the Tulsi tree. Shvasan, while breathing. Shava, still a dead body. Ya, who, to, but, Naveda, never experienced. Gandham, the aroma. Translation. A person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Report by Śrīla Prabhupāda. According to Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakur, the breathing dead body is a ghost. When a man dies, he is called dead. But when he again appears in subtle form, not visible to our present vision, and yet acts, such a dead body is called a ghost. Ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. Similarly, the ghost-like non-devotees who have no respect for the pure devotees, nor for the Vishnu deity in the temples, create a fearful situation for the devotees at all times. The The Lord never accepts any offerings by such impure ghosts. There is a common saying that one should first love the dog of the beloved before one shows any loving sentiments for the beloved. The stage of pure devotion is attained by sincerely serving a pure devotee of the Lord. The first condition of devotional service to the Lord is therefore to be a servant of a pure devotee. And this condition is fulfilled by the statement, reception of the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, who has also served another pure devotee. That is the way of pure disciplic succession, or devotional parampara. Maharaj Raghuvana inquired from the great saint Jad Bharat as to how he had attained such a liberated stage of a Paramahansa. And in answer, the great saint replied as follows, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12. Bhuvanaista tapasa nayati na che jaya nirvapanad grihadva na chandasa nai vajalagni suryair vina mahatpadara jogishekam. O King Raghuvana, the perfectional stage of devotional service, or the Paramahansa stage of life, cannot be attained unless one is blessed by the dust of the feet of great devotees. It is never attained by tapasya, austerity, the Vedic worshipping process, acceptance of the renounced order of life, the discharge of the duties of household life, the chanting of the Vedic hymns, or the performance of penances in the hot sun, within cold water, or before the blazing fire. In other words, Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure, unconditional devotees. And as such, only the devotees can deliver Krishna to another devotee. Krishna is never obtainable directly. Lord Chaitanya therefore designated himself as Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasadasandasa, or the most obedient servant of the servants of the Lord, who maintains the Gopi damsels at Vrindavan. A pure devotee therefore never approaches the Lord directly, but tries to please the servant of the Lord's servants. And thus the Lord becomes pleased. And only then can the devotee relish the taste of the tulsi leaves stuck to his lotus feet. In the Brahma Samhita it is said that the Lord is never to be found by becoming a great scholar of the Vedic literature, but he is very easily approachable through his pure devotee. In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani. the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to the sincere devotees. And once she recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. The conclusion is, therefore, that one should be more serious about seeking the mercy of the devotee than that of the Lord directly. And by one's doing so, by the goodwill of the devotee, the natural attraction for the service of the Lord will be revived. Translation again. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Om Jnana Chinirandasya Dhanam Jana Salakaya Chatsuva Nirikam Yena Tazmaya Sri Guru Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavisham Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swakadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shanyavadi Pastratyadesha Tanini Sri Krishna Chaitanya Paramukhyananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the last 10 days, we have celebrated many joyous occasions. 10 days ago was the auspicious occasion of Sri Radhanastami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani. And just in the past week, on Tuesday, we celebrated Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. On Wednesday, we observed Srila Haridas Thakur's disappearance day. And on Thursday, we observed Vishwarup Mahotsav, the day on which Lord Chaitanya's older brother Vishwarup took sannyas, and it was also the day that our Srila Prabhupada accepted sannyas. So what do all of these holy days have in common? They have in common the celebration of the Lord's devotee. And glorifying the Lord's devotee pleases the Lord, Krishna, more than glorifying Krishna himself. Although Krishna and his devotees are always associated, so glorifying the devotee means glorifying Krishna. And glorifying Krishna means glorifying the devotees. Once, nothing. So in the science of deity worship, archana, there is a rule that one should not praise another person before the deity. And the reason is that in material conditioned life, we are used to keeping ourselves at the center. It's natural. Each one of us sees life as if we were the center of creation. We go through life as if it were a movie, and we are the hero or the heroine. And everyone else in the movie are the supporting cast meant to support us and do what we want them to do, so that we, as the hero or heroine of the movie, are able to enjoy life the way we want. And the problem is that all the people that we think are supposed to play supporting roles in our movie are thinking they're the heroes or heroines, and that we're supposed to play the supporting role in their movie. And do what we want. So the process of devotional service means to gradually purify the heart and reform the consciousness, so that instead of thinking of Krishna, instead of thinking of ourselves as the hero or heroine, we think of Radha and Krishna as the hero and heroine. And instead of thinking of everyone as supporting cast for us, we see ourselves and everyone else as meant to support the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and glorify them. So this is a revolution. It requires a revolution in consciousness, a turning around from trying, instead of being trying to be the master, we realize that actually we're the servant by nature. Now in the material world, people don't want to be someone else's servant. It's a very demeaning position. It's considered a very miserable position to be someone else's servant. But again, the material world is a inverted reflection of the spiritual world. And what's the best in the spiritual world is considered to be the worst here. So it's actually the perfection of life to be a servant of Krishna. And the reason that we are dissatisfied being servants in the material world is because the masters in the material world are not fit to serve. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that in India, when people want a position, the best position is to be a government servant. Because if you enter the government service, you get so many facilities, and there's so much room for advancement. So we have to serve. By nature, we are servants. But we have to learn how to serve in such a way that we are happy and satisfied. And that comes when we serve Krishna. Otherwise, we serve our husbands, our wives, our children, our parents, our bodies, our senses, our tongues, our bellies and different parts of our bodies. Once Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture making the same point, that by constitution we are servants. And one young man in the audience said, "I don't see why I should have to serve someone." And Srila Prabhupada replied that you have to serve because your business is to serve. You cannot avoid service. And Srila Prabhupada said that when you go to work, don't you serve some master? He said, "Yes, but that's material. But spiritually, I don't feel that I'm any less than anyone else and that I should have to serve anyone else." And Srila Prabhupada replied that your nature is to serve. And if you don't serve Krishna, and Krishna includes his pure devotees, you will serve Maya. And the result of serving Maya is that you will be punished by Maya. You'll have to suffer the repetition of birth, disease, old age, and death. So there's no question of not serving. The question is who to serve or what to serve to be happy, even while served. And that is Krishna. There is a story that a young man wanted to serve the greatest. And given that we have to serve in any case, we should think we want to serve the greatest. So he was living in a village. And in the village there was one businessman. He was richer than everyone else, and everyone respected him. So he thought, "I'll serve him." So he became a servant of that wealthy businessman. Then after some time, the tax collector came. And that wealthy merchant was shown all sorts of respect to the tax collector and giving him money. So he thought, oh, the tax collector is the greatest, so I'll become the servant of the tax collector. So he became the assistant to the tax collector, and everywhere the tax collector went, people were offering him respects and giving him money. And he was very happy. So then he thought, oh. But then the tax collector eventually came to the capital, and he gave all the money and offered all obeisance to the king. So then he thought, oh, the king is the greatest. So I'll become the servant of the king. So he became the king's servant, and he was sure now he was serving the greatest. And then one day, the king with his royal retinue went into the forest, and he delivered fruits, vegetables, grains, sugar, various items to a saintly person, to a devotee. And I thought, wow, this saintly person is even greater than the king. So I'll serve him. And then he saw the saintly person cut the fruits and prepare a plate very nicely and offered it to the deity of Krishna. God and Krishna, and bow down and offer obeisance to Krishna. And then he came to the greatest. But serving Krishna, we don't serve Krishna directly. By serving the devotee, we serve Krishna in a better way than if we try to serve Krishna directly, because we have no means to approach Krishna directly. So, that is our quest. That should be the quest of every one of us, to serve the greatest, and serving the greatest means serving Krishna or Krishna's devotees, because Krishna himself becomes subordinate to his devotees or controlled by his devotees, not by his devotees exactly, but by their love. And that is the case of Srimati Radharani, and therefore, as Srila Prabhupada said, if Radharani recommends us to Krishna, Krishna will accept us into his association, into his service. So this is the most exalted position, to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And to do that, we have to give up our false ego. Our false egos keep us in the material world. Based on false ego, we think I'm the body, or the mind, or the intelligence. And the psychology of the false ego is, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the proprietor. So you have to give up all that nonsense and come to a real position as a servant of the servant of Krishna. Otherwise, we suffer in all the varieties of emotion in the material world. From the perspective of a liberated soul, are just different varieties of suffering. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that you may go to an insane asylum, although they might have a new term for it. And some patient will be laughing hysterically, and some patient will be crying hysterically, but it's all suffering. There's no real difference between that hysterical laughter and hysterical crying, because they're crazy. And all of us in the material world are crazy, thinking we're God or we can become God. We're crazy. And our so-called happiness and distress, they're all just different manifestations of craziness and suffering. So we have to give that up. And the way to give it up is to chant the holy names and serve the devotees. Both have the same effect. They cleanse the dirt from the heart. Cheto Darpano Marjanam. Because the holy name is Krishna, and when we chant and hear the holy names and glories of Krishna, Krishna in the form of sound enters our heart and cleanses it. And Krishna, as the Paramatma, is already in the heart. And when he sees that we are eager to hear his messages, he also helps the cleansing process. Because on our own we are incapable of cleaning our hearts. There's too much dirt that has been there for too long. So, Shrinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Just Ridantisti Vibhadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. Krishna is Suritsatam. He is the friend of the truthful devotee. Truthful devotee means one who's sincere. Not making a show, but sincerely endeavoring to cleanse the heart by devotion, service. And serving the devotee has the same effect. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutamashtoke bhaktya bhagati naishtiki. That by regularly hearing the book Bhagavat or serving the person Bhagavat, all that is inauspicious in the heart becomes destroyed almost to nil. And loving service to the Lord, who is praised by beautiful songs, becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So these are the two processes, and they are very potent, especially in combination. And that will relieve us of this false ego, false identification with the body. vain pursuit to be the hero or heroine supreme. So, in deity worship, the whole endeavor is to make Krishna the center. When we worship the deity, all of our attention is on Krishna, Radha and Krishna, Gaudiya, Giri Govardhan, and not on anyone else. I mean, if Krishna in person came into the temple, your attention would be fixed on him. So that's the idea of deity worship. And there are many rules and regulations summarized in the Nectar of Devotion. We should read regularly, read the rules and regulations of deity worship. Otherwise, we will commit offense. Aparadha. Out of ignorance. That we, if we're doing some service, we cannot be ignorant. We have to know what we are supposed to be doing. So one of the rules in deity worship is not to praise anyone in front of the deity. This refers specifically to praising ordinary people. There was one time when we were in Srila Prabhupada's room at Kailash Saksaria's home in Bombay when Srila Prabhupada first returned to India and came to Bombay. He stayed there, and we disciples came from America. Most of the disciples who were with him in the first group, they came to Bombay and met him there. So one of the devotees named Guru Das, he was praising another devotee. And then he noticed that Srila Prabhupada's small Radha Krishna deities were there. So he checked himself and said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, I'm sorry that you're not supposed to praise anyone in front of the deities." And without thinking, I did that. And Srila Prabhupada replied that Krishna is already glorified, but he takes more pleasure when his devotee is glorified. So that's our method of purification, and that is our method of approaching Krishna. And that is why we celebrate these holy days as special occasions to glorify Krishna and his devotees and beg for their mercy. Because that is how one attains the liberated platform, and that is how one gets the mercy of Krishna and is admitted into the association of Krishna. And there, all relationships are harmonious, because Krishna is in the center. Here there's conflict because each of us is competing to be in the center. Each of us is competing ultimately to be Krishna, to be God, to be the Lord. And so there's always conflict. It's always conflict. But when Krishna is the center, then all the harmonious, all the relationships are harmonious. It doesn't matter what service you do. All service to Krishna is absolute. It doesn't matter what you do. It's not like in the material world where people think,
I want to be this, I don't want to be that.
It's like a symphony orchestra. It doesn't matter what instrument you play. Someone might play the violin, someone else might play the trumpet, someone might play the drums. But everyone plays whatever role is assigned to them under the direction of the conductor. And the result is beautiful music. And our purpose is to please Krishna. Bhakti means to please Krishna. So it doesn't matter what we do. What matters is if Krishna is pleased. So in this symphony of devotional service, it doesn't matter what instrument we're playing. In a way, the body that we are given is an instrument given by Krishna. It doesn't matter what instrument we're playing. Just play it according to the musical score of the composer, who's Krishna, under the direction of the conductor, who is a devotee of Krishna, and the result will be a beautiful symphony, and Krishna will be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, then naturally we are pleased. We want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. That's not a problem. But again, this is the same question. How can we be happy? By trying to make ourselves happy independently, we can't be happy. But by trying to make Krishna happy in the proper way, and actually making Krishna happy, then we become happy. We become happy individually and collectively. And that's why we're here. That's why we're here in this temple, to make Krishna happy and to experience happiness in Krishna's pleasure. And we're feeling it. To some extent, we're feeling it. That's why we're here. And Krishna is most pleased when we bring more people to him. So if we have that beautiful symphony of divine music, of devotional service, and are part of it, then naturally we'll want to bring other people into it so they can share in that happiness and increase Krishna's happiness, which in turn will increase our happiness, which will in turn increase Krishna's happiness. So we should take it very seriously. Not as some recreational activity or some pious work that we perform to get some material benefit. But we should take it seriously. Cleanse the heart. Shrimata Svakata Krishna Punyashavakita. And then we will feel the results. And we'll want others to have the same experience. So you are already here. You're in the association. You're before the deities. You're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You're in the association of devotees, you're chanting the holy names. So it's all here. It's just a matter of taking it seriously and giving yourself to it fully. Then you get the result. If you do it half-heartedly, then you might get something, but not much. You shouldn't hold that. Srila Prabhupada has sometimes given the example of, let's say, a rich man in India. He reaches a certain age and he decides, I'm going to retire to Vrindavan. So he takes his belongings and he goes to Vrindavan, and his life savings of 2 crores of rupees he leaves behind with his family. And he goes to Krishna with his mala. And he tells the family, send me 200 rupees a month for my maintenance. But that is not surrendering to Krishna. Prabhupada said Krishna is very intelligent. He sees you're coming to him. You're coming to Vrindavan with your mala, but what about your 2 crores? And that was, he gave that talk about, that was 1973, so 40 years ago. So it'd be probably more like 20 crores. You know, you're coming with your japa mala, but what about your 20 crores? You're leaving that behind with your family. And that also, in the expectation, they'll send you your monthly allowance. So he said, Krishna's very intelligent. He sees you're coming to Vrindavan, but you're not really taking shelter of him. You're not really surrendering to him. You're really serving your family, which really means you're serving your senses. It's just an extension of your senses. So, yayata mam prapadyante, if you surrender to Krishna, he reciprocates. So, he's, you're not surrendering to Krishna, you're giving your money to your family. You let your family take care of you. It's not. So you also shouldn't come to the temple like that. That the real thing is me and my family. That's the real thing. And Krishna's there, and of course Krishna's there, and we want to be pious, and we want to be good, and we want to be respected as being pious, but the real thing is me and my family. So, that's alright in the beginning. Everyone begins with that mentality. But we have to purify our consciousness. We have to reform that mentality. And all of these processes are meant for that. Done properly. Serving the deity means following all the rules and regulations which are meant to fix your mind on Krishna. Chanting the holy name means chanting each name properly and hearing it. We try to hear every name that we chant. That will purify us. Not just outwardly chanting and then inwardly thinking of so many other things. It takes effort. Again, in the beginning, we will think of other things, but we have to practice controlling the mind. Therefore, same with the deity service. We have to practice. It's like it's a rule. You don't talk in the deity room.
You don't talk in the deity kitchen. The deity kitchen is an extension of the deity room. You only think about your service to Krishna, or you know, hear some recitation of Krishna's glories, so that your consciousness is on Krishna, and that will purify the mind. That will purify the mind, and then you'll be peaceful and happy. Otherwise, they'll continue in the mind is like a turbulent ocean causing us distress, and we'll continue in the turbulent ocean of birth and death, samsara sava, and we'll just be tossed hither and thither. We'll be suffering, grasping for air, gasping for air, grasping for support, and just continue that misery. So, I congratulate you for being here. You could have been many other places. So I congratulate you for being here, but don't be here in a superficial way. But enter deeply and get the real benefit. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thanks for your kind association. In the purport, Prabhupada says, love me, love my dog, love us, mentality so the master is. So similarly, the parents think, if you love me, you should also love my crying child, you should love my talkative child. So how do we explain to them that we not only love them, we also love the child? But it's what thoughts and Bhagavatam is more important than the Prabhupada is like.
Oh, you mean when children are causing a disturbance in the satsang?
Yes.
Well, this is a very good question. How we show our love for our children. There is a this is Vedic principle that from birth until the age of 5, you treat the child like your father. And whatever your father says, you do. So up until the age of the 5, you know, if the child wants to be fed, you feed the child. If the child needs to go to the bathroom, you take the child to the bathroom. I mean, this is in broad terms. Then from the age of 5 to 15, you treat the child like your enemy. You have to subdue your enemy and bring the enemy under your control. So the idea is that by fulfilling the child's desires when the child is young, the child becomes attached to the parent. And then when you discipline the child, because of that attachment, the child will accept it. I mean, it should all be done with love. That goes without saying. But it's just how we show our love. And then by the time the child is 16 years of age, after that, you treat the child like your friend. Because by then the child is so well trained and educated that you can trust the child and treat your child like a friend. actually just thought of a saying. It's totally mundane and totally irrelevant. But I just thought of it, so I better get it out. But the British, they had a saying that the North Indians are our friends, the South Indians are our servants, and the Bengalis are our enemies. Anyway, it's the idea of, you know, friends, enemies, and so, but yeah. So, yeah, this is a principle, like they say, spare the rod and spoil the child. At a certain stage, discipline is necessary. Of course, it should be administered in the right way, with love. And that will be for the benefit of the child. Srila Prabhupada told the story, I mean, it's a little extreme, but he told the story of a young man who was involved in some crime. And he was sentenced to death. So before, you know, he was to be sentenced to death, the judge asked him if he had any last desires. And he said, yes, I would like my mother to come forward. Stepmother, actually. So she came forward, and he was so angry that he literally bit off her ear. Like, I want to tell you something. And she was like so shocked and horrified, apart from the nastiness of the and the pain. She said, you know, I always treated you like you were my own child. I always gave you whatever you wanted. I always let you do whatever you wanted to do. And he said, yes, and that's why I'm in this position. So we should teach the children etiquette, good behavior, discipline. I mean, I've never been a biological parent, so I'm not really an authority. But, yeah. But as far as that point about the children making a disturbance during the satsang, it might be good to have a separate activity for them. That would probably be the most. I mean, some children, they, you know, they're very sober and they sit and listen from a young age. But the other approach would be to have some activity for them. And at many places they have, like, you know, one or two ladies, they'll take the children to a separate room and engage them in whatever, coloring, you know, whatever's appropriate for their age.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir. Oh. Oh. Okay.
About the saying you said that we are not in the South America. I mean, that is true. There must be some.
No, the British. I'm talking about the British when they were ruling India. I'll tell you afterwards. Yes.
Devotees
That's an excellent question. An excellent question. Why does suffering come to devotees? Does it mean that the devotee is not practicing Krishna consciousness properly? It could, but not necessarily. One can be practicing properly, and by the arrangement of the Lord, one could still suffer, because first of all, we're in the material world, and second of all, the devotee's behavior in the midst of suffering sets an example for other people how to deal in similar situations. Like, I forgot, Monday was Ramana Dvadasi, the appearance day of Lord Ramana. And Bali Maharaj, he surrendered everything to Krishna, to Ramana, but he was still punished superficially. But in the end, Krishna gave himself to Ramana. So another example is Queen Kunti. The Pandavas, they underwent a lot of trials and tribulations, but in the end, Queen Kunti prayed to Krishna that let the calamities come again and again, because in the face of the calamities, we saw your lotus feet. And by seeing your lotus feet, we're saved from having to see the repetition of birth and death. And now that the battle is over, and now that we're established as the rulers in Hastinapur, you're leaving us. So we'd rather have all the calamities with you than to live in royal opulence without you. So that's really the mood of the devotee. And sometimes in distress we think of Krishna more. Like there's a saying, there are no atheists in the foxholes. Like in war, you know, in war, when the munitions are exploding everywhere, there's no atheists, because they know only Krishna can save them, only God can save them. So the real thing is to always remember Krishna, never forget him. And sometimes that distress can be an impetus to remembrance of Krishna. And then that distress becomes a blessing. A blessing in disguise, a blessing. That was a very good question. All right. I'm not sure exactly what comes next, but there's Arti just begun, and maybe, I don't know, but from the few people leaving the temple room, they might be Prasad in Garanga Hall, or the queue might be forming. So, do we have that? Will someone tell us what?
Thank you.